Family, when you're sick in bed for a period of time, you may find yourself thinking and thankful for the blessings of health, a wonderful wife, as I'm very thankful for. You might find yourself thinking about wealth, the wealth to have a comfortable home, a comfortable place to convalesce, a very good healthcare system as we have in the United States. You may find yourself thinking about other access and good health that you've had in the past that you have taken for granted, that you've taken for granted. That was my case during this three-week bout with COVID. I spent a lot of time doing the only thing that I could, which was to think and to be thankful. To think and to be thankful. You know, I thought not only about my feast trip this coming fall to the West African countries of Malawi and Zimbabwe, but I thought about my travels to Ghana and East Africa, extensive travels throughout India that I've taken, the most recent trip during the feast to Kolkata, India, and Negombo, Sri Lanka, and the extensive poverty and the meager healthcare systems that I have seen in my travels. We are so blessed in this nation. We really are blessed. Even in developing countries of the world like Japan or throughout the Caribbean or Mauritius or Chile or Mexico, there still are the sprawling ghettos of the inner cities of highly developed countries, even around the world, including the United States, where poverty and want is in abundance. In abundance. Compared to the world economic standards, most of those in God's church would be considered rich. We would be considered wealthy. Being obedient to God's law is not a guarantee of health or wealth or by any means, but God says that He will provide our needs. And we have example in Scripture of church members pulling their resources together to take care of the financial and physical needs of others. We also have examples in Scripture of those who had more than sufficient, but failed in character when it came to giving. And I laid in my bed these past 3 weeks thinking about that, thinking about the blessings that we have, the blessings that I have. With so much abundance that we have in the United States, there are three things that I would like us to consider. Three things that I considered as at the peak of my illness and incapacity during this COVID-19 bout that I was dealing with. There are three things that I think would be helpful in our being more like Jesus Christ. There are three things that I think I would like us to consider, to think about, as I've had to think about during this past 3 weeks or more. Number one, be thankful for sufficiency. Be thankful for sufficiency. Number two, be mindful of excess. Be mindful of excess. The things that you have above what you need. The things that you have above sufficiency. Be thankful. And be mindful. Be mindful of access. And number three, be willing to give. Be willing to give. You know, today I'm not speaking specifically about tithes or offerings, but rather a mindset that God would want His children, Christ's followers, to have. You know, it's really a characteristic that all people should have, whether they know Jesus Christ or not. Everyone should have a characteristic that they want to give. Everyone should have a characteristic that they notice individuals and people who are going through difficult times, who are going through trials. It's a level of empathy and sympathy and understanding for those who do not have what is sufficient, either financially or health-wise, regardless of the circumstance or the situation that they find themselves in. You know, it is said, death makes all men equal. I add that severe illness makes all men thoughtful. Makes all men thoughtful. If you've ever been severely ill, going through something that you're not sure what is going to be on the other side, how well you'll recover, if you recover fully, it makes one thoughtful. Makes one thoughtful. I want to encourage us to be thankful for sufficiency, be mindful of excess, and be willing to give. I want to go through these three points. First of all, be thankful for sufficiency. Be thankful for sufficiency. I thought a lot when I was laying there about what is sufficiency. What is sufficiency? Let's begin over in Luke chapter 12 and verse 22. Go with me over to Luke chapter 12 and verse 22. You know, God knows that we have physical and that we have financial needs. He knows that. Jesus Christ provided these very profound words as a reminder to each of us that with life comes a degree of worry, a degree of concern about our needs being met, or in other words, having sufficiency. Having sufficiency. Oftentimes when we think about sufficiency, we think in terms of financial sufficiency. But what about health sufficiency? What about just having the strength to do what you need to do from day to day? You know, being a recipient of the blessings that Jesus Christ points out here in Luke chapter 12 is something that we must be thankful for every day. Circumstances in life can change so drastically. My bout with COVID reminded me of how quickly life can change. I went from feeling weaker than normal during my Thursday and Friday 20-mile bike ride to being totally incapacitated by Saturday evening, just 36 hours later, by a virus that I could not see, I could not smell, I could not handle. I went from being sufficient to being physically dependent. Physically dependent in 36 hours. My situation was minor compared to the tragedy that struck Stephen, the Blake and Moore family member who was working there at the airport in Phoenix. His life changed in an instant. In an instant. My situation was minor compared to his. But being physically dependent because of illness or injury means that we no longer have the physical health that is sufficient to sustain ourselves. We want sufficiency at the very least, don't we? None of us want to be in a place where we have to be cared for, where we have to be fed, where we have to be clothed, where we have to be taken to the bathroom or maybe even wiped. No one wants to be in that condition. Everyone wants to at least be health sufficient, where you at least can take care of yourself. No one ever wants to be to the place where they are totally dependent, where they are health insufficient. Christ is speaking particularly about physical and financial sufficiency here in Luke chapter 12. Let's begin reading in Luke chapter 12, verse 22. Then he said to his disciples, "Therefore I say to you, do not worry about your life." You see, Jesus Christ isn't talking about just any simple trial that you're going through. He's talking about life. Being worried about your life. When you're talking about being worried about your life, you're talking about health sufficiency. And Christ says, don't worry about your life. Then he says, what you will eat, nor about the body, what you will put on. Life is more than food, and the body more than clothing. Consider the raven, for they neither sow nor reap, which have neither storehouse nor barn, and God feeds them. Of how much more value are you than birds? And which of you, by worrying, can add one cubit to his stature? If you then are not able to do the least, why are you anxious for the rest? If you're not able to do what is sufficient, or if we turn it around, if you're able to do what is sufficient, if you're able to have life sufficiency where you can at least take care of yourself, why do you worry about other things? Because it's a blessing to be just life and health sufficient. He says, if you then are not able to do the least, why are you anxious for the rest? Consider the lilies, how they grow. They neither toil nor spin. And yet I say to you, even Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. If then God so clothed the grass, which today is in the field and tomorrow is thrown into the oven, how much more will he clothe you, O you of little faith? Of little faith. And do not seek what you should eat or what you should drink, nor be anxious in mind. For all these things the nations of the world will seek after, and your Father knows that you need these things. You know, there are things that we would like, there are things that we need, but how much do you actually have above what is sufficient? How much do I actually have that is above what is sufficient? You know, if God were to take away from you everything except what you need, everything except what is sufficient, trimmed your life down to only what was sufficient, how much excess would you have to give away? You see, we are blessed. And compared to much of the world, we in the United States are wealthy and rich in comparison. Christ says that your need consists of food. He tells us what is sufficient. He said your life consists of food, of drink, and of clothing. That's it. That's what is sufficient. Food, drink, and clothing. Now, he does not directly and specifically mention shelter here, but I believe that the passage does include shelter indirectly by emphasizing the absence of the storehouse and the absence of a barn. He says the raven does not have storehouse or barn. I believe he's trying to tell us something. You see, storehouse in the Greek is a room in the inner of the house, normally without window openings to the outside. It's an inner room, a chamber on the ground floor or interior of an oriental house, a secret chamber, a closet, a storehouse. So he says, you know, the raven has a house. You have a house. But extra rooms in that house is above what is sufficient. The raven doesn't have a storehouse. That extra room. And he mentions a barn. Now, first of all, this extra room, you can just jot in your notes, Luke 12, verse 3. This inner room, Luke 12, verse 3 says, therefore, whatever you have spoken in the dark will be heard in the light, and what you have spoken in the inner room will be proclaimed on the housetop. You see, Luke 12, verse 3 emphasizes the fact that in our homes, we are blessed to have a secret or private room and a private area where we can actually go in privacy within the house. That's a blessing. Jesus Christ says that is above what is sufficient. That's above what is sufficient. And then it mentions barn. The word barn is a building for storage, a storehouse. In a number of languages, an important distinction is made between buildings used for storing farm produce and those which are used to store other types of materials. It mentions the storehouse over in Luke 12, verse 16 to 18. You can jot it down. Luke 12, 16 to 18, it says, then he spoke a parable to them, saying, the ground of a certain rich man yielded plentifully. And he thought within himself, saying, what shall I do since I have no room to store my crops? So he said, I will do this. I will pull down my barns and build greater. There I will store all my crops and my goods. But God says that sufficient is a shelter that does not consist of extra rooms. We're blessed. A shelter that is sufficient does not have any extra rooms. You can think in terms of a tent or a single room as a shelter of sufficiency. And that shelter of sufficiency, as it says there in Luke 12, is not a private room, but is shared with others. You know, that is how the poor around the world live. The poor around the world have, at very least, just a single shelter, a single room. That's all they have. And there is no privacy. Guess what? God says that's sufficient. That's sufficient. You see, in order to thank God for providing sufficiency, as Luke 12 describes, we have to consider and meditate on what our life would look like if God only provided that which is sufficient. See, materialistically, we can imagine that. We can think, you can sit back and think and meditate on, and as I did while I was sick, you know, if God only provided me what was sufficient, food, drink, clothing, and a single room. That's it. God would say that's sufficient. And in that single room would be wife, children, oftentimes grandparents in that single room. That's how most of the world lives. So materialistically, we can imagine that. But what if God also provided us only what was health sufficient? What if he took away from you everything else that you have from a health perspective and only provided you what was health sufficient? Sufficient for your health. Sufficient for you to live. What is necessary for health sufficiency from God's perspective? I dare say that many of us are highly blessed with much health excess. I dare say that much of us have a whole lot more health than what we actually need to live and to persist. Consider what Jesus Christ said to the Apostle Paul. Go with me over to 2 Corinthians 12, verse 7. 2 Corinthians 12, verse 7. Again, our first point is that we need to be thankful for sufficiency. We understand material sufficiency, but what about health sufficiency? Consider what Christ said to the Apostle Paul, the Apostle Paul clearly felt that his health circumstances that he was dealing with was limiting his health sufficiency. Christ, I have things that I need to do. Christ, I have things that I need to be working on. And my health is at a state where I can't do what I need to do. What did Christ have to say to him about health sufficiency? Here in 2 Corinthians 12, beginning in verse 7, he says, at least, this is Apostle Paul speaking, he says, and least I should be exalted above measure by the abundance of revelation, a thorn in the flesh was given to me, a messenger of Satan to buffet me, lest I be exalted above measure. Concerning this thing, I pleaded with the Lord three times that it might depart from me. And Christ said, he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, most gladly, I will rather boast in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Therefore, I take pleasure in infirmities, in approaches, in needs, in persecution, in distresses, for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then I am strong. You see, we don't often think in terms of sufficiency when it comes to our health. But Jesus Christ says to the Apostle Paul, guess what? My grace is sufficient. My grace. We don't often want to think about that when we're going through trials, when we're going through troubles. As the Apostle Paul said, when I'm dealing with approaches and needs, persecution, distresses, Jesus Christ says, yeah, when you're dealing with all of that, guess what? From a health sufficiency perspective, my grace is sufficient. My grace. You know, when we're dealing with body pain and other things, you know, most would conclude that a body without any pain, a body without any suffering, without any trials, disability, weaknesses, any woe, any depression, any discouragement, any sorrow, any exhaustion would then be a sufficient life. Right? Father, from a health perspective, give me a body that doesn't have any of those problems. I don't want dementia. I don't want Alzheimer's. I don't want cancer. I don't want poor sight. I don't want any of this. Because Father God, that's sufficient. What Christ says, no, my grace is sufficient. My grace is sufficient. You know, the Bible proclaims through many examples that health challenges and trials are a part of life. And it is God's grace that is sufficient. His grace. You know, the blessing of healing, the blessing of answered prayer, the blessing of God's extra care for you is extra. Right? Do we realize that? God blessing us, God bestowing blessings upon us is extra. That's extra. If God said to human beings, you're born, your body will deal with whatever comes your way. You'll deal with whatever treacheries, depressions, heartache, misery, reproaches, distresses, persecutions, and that's it. That's life. That's it. The blessings that God bestows upon us are extra. That's extra. We oftentimes don't think about that. We can become very depressed. We can become very discouraged, as I began to do somewhat during this sickness. I had things to do. I had brethren I wanted to call. Hey, folks, I wanted to pray for. And I was too weak to do so. Christ says, my grace is sufficient. My grace is sufficient. Go with me over to James chapter 1, verse 2. James chapter 1, verse 2. Again, I want us to think about sufficiency. Be thankful for sufficiency here in James chapter 1, verse 2. It says, my brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience, but let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. Wait a minute. That doesn't sound right, does it? Let patience have its perfect work. I'm going through all sorts of trials. I'm sick. Got a fever in my head. My hands are freezing. What's going on here? I'm dealing with health insufficiency. You know, the commode is 8 steps away. If it were 10 steps away, I'm not sure if I could have made it. When you're so sick that you count the number of steps to get to the commode. That's how sick I was. Health insufficient. And James says here, lacking nothing. You know, I'm weak. And this trial is supposed to produce a state where I'm complete and lacking nothing. I'm already lacking nothing. What are you talking about? But from God's perspective, even in the midst of terrible illness, I have sufficiency through his grace. I have sufficiency through his grace. So that the trial can indeed produce patience. The trial, the difficulty, whatever it might be, can produce a perfect work. The trial can be complete. And even if you're in the midst of the trial, because of God's grace, you lack nothing. You lack nothing. That's a difficult concept to grasp. Go with me over to 1 Corinthians 10, verse 13. 1 Corinthians 10, verse 13. It says here in 1 Corinthians 10, verse 13, no temptation has overtaken you except such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will also make a way of escape that you may be able to bear it. Sufficiency in the midst of the trial, sufficiency in the midst of temptation is God's grace to be able to bear it. You see, it doesn't say that the trial will just go away. There's no guarantee on the timing of that. God doesn't count sufficiency as the lack of trial. He doesn't count health sufficiency as the lack of illness. He says, my grace is that you'll be able to bear it. You'll get through it. And sometimes getting through it may be in this life, but may be in the next. Where's our faith? Where's our faith? John chapter 9, verse 1. John chapter 9, verse 1. It says, now Jesus passed by. He saw a man who was blind from birth. And his disciples asked him, saying, Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Jesus answered, neither this man nor his parents sinned, but that the works of God should be revealed in him. Sufficiency, health sufficiency, is knowing that God has a plan for you. Health sufficiency is knowing that God has a plan for you. You may rise up from that bed of sickness. You may rise up from that bed of illness, or you may not. But God says, my grace is sufficient. My plan for you is sufficient. My grace for you is sufficient. To thank God for sufficiency, which he supplies, in order to get to that point, we have to pause and really think about what sufficient is. What is sufficiency? True sufficiency looks more like poverty than wealth. True sufficiency looks more like sickness than health. From God's perspective. Because his grace is sufficient. So if you take away everything that is above your excess, be it financial or health-wise, what you're left with is God's grace, God's promise for you, and God says, that is sufficient. That is sufficient. You know, breaking bread with families in some of the most remote places on earth, which I have been very pleased and blessed to do, was breaking bread with people who truly only had what was sufficient. It left me humbled. Left me humbled knowing that I have so much more than what is sufficient. You know, walking through hospitals or nursing homes or mental health facilities, particularly in the third world, you walk away just shaking your head. And we see the same thing in this nation. If you ever go into a nursing home or a mental health facility or seeing the crippled or the physically challenged in the public on the streets, it should leave you humbled, knowing that you have much more than what is sufficient. You know, are we truly able to thank God for sufficiency? Or are we complainers about what we don't have, either financially or what we don't have from a health perspective? Where are we? It is a challenge that we have in this life. Go with me over to Psalm 55. Psalm 55. David, a man after God's own heart, was challenged with being thankful for sufficiency at times. Here in Psalm 55, beginning in verse 1, it says, "Give ear to my prayer, O God, and do not hide yourself from my supplications. Attend to me and hear me. I am restless in my complaint, and I moan noisily." I did quite a bit of that. Restless in my complaint, moaning noisily, feeling sorry for myself. That's a normal part of this process. But thankfully, God guided me to say, "David, what is sufficient? What is sufficient? I have provided you sufficiency, whether you rise up from this or not." David comes to realize that if you drop down to verse 22, Psalm 5, verse 22, he gets it all in perspective. He says this, he says, "Cast your burden on the Lord, and he shall sustain you. He shall never permit the righteous to be moved." That's sufficiency. When you're going through troubles, you're going through trials, you're going through something that you don't understand, sufficiency is to cast that upon the Lord. And recognizing that sufficiency is Jesus Christ sustaining you. And that he will not permit you, if you remain righteous through the process, to be moved away from him. A hard concept to understand when we're going through difficult times, when we're going through trials. We get a diagnosis of cancer or illness in our parents or children. No, I am by no means saying that we should not pray for improved health or improved finances or to have more finances than we need or better health than we could possibly need. But are we truly thankful that God has supplied us what we do need, that he supplies us our sufficiency? What is sufficient? Because what God considers sufficiency is not what we consider sufficiency. God's mind and his thoughts are so much higher than ours. Be thankful for sufficiency. Point number two, be mindful of excess. Be mindful of excess. Be thankful for sufficiency, but be mindful of excess and how we choose before God to use that excess. You know, excess is everything above sufficiency. Everything above sufficiency. You know, Jesus Christ said there in Luke 12, food, water, and clothing, and a one-room shelter. Everything else from a materialistic perspective is excess. The Bible teaches that the ability to be alive is sufficiency with God's grace. Even though you may be going through the trials and everything else in life. So we have to be mindful of excess, anything above sufficiency. Take everything else that you have above what is sufficient. Take away your extra clothes, extra food, extra drink, extra rooms in your house. Take away your good health beyond what is necessary for you to consume what is sufficient. What personally would life look like for you? What does it look like then? All that you have above what is sufficient is excess. Family, we're blessed. We're blessed. Let's consider one psalmist's lament regarding the rich versus the poor. Go with me over to Psalm 49. Psalm 49. Here in Psalm 49, the title to Psalm 49 says, "To the chief musician, a psalm of the sons of Korah." Verse 1, Psalm 49, verse 1, says, "Hear this, all people. Give ear, all the inhabitants of the world, both low and high, rich and poor. My mouth shall speak wisdom, and the meditation of my heart shall give understanding. I will incline my ear to a proverb. I will disclose my dark sayings on a harp. Why should I fear in the days of evil when the iniquity at my heels surround me?" Now, this psalm of the sons of Korah, as we shall see, is a warning to those who are rich. Now, I believe it is more accurate in today's term to use a broader definition of rich being those who are blessed to have more than what is sufficient. If you have more than what is sufficient, you're rich. You have access. The word rich here in the Hebrew means wealthy, pertaining to having considerably more than the societal norm, a wealthy person. The word poor here means needy, pertaining to a person in want, usually physical need, who must live sparingly, and so also a class of low status and little political power. You see, the Bible sometimes contrasts the extremes, the rich versus the poor, so that we can see clearly the lesson in between. Today, we make contrast between the haves and the have-nots. Right, we say it in different terms today, the haves and the have-nots. You know, a person who considered themselves as a have-not would be equivalent to the poor. A person who considered themselves as a have would can be considered a rich, or at least not poor. You know, extensive wealth on one hand and dire poverty or hopelessness on the other. You know, there is certainly a hardworking upper middle, middle, and lower middle class that struggles to make daily living. And I don't believe that the psalmist was intending to eliminate those in the upper middle, the middle, or the lower middle class within societies. And if the line is gray, an individual can teeter-totter very quickly between rich and poor, between have and have not, just like we can totter very quickly between being rich in health and poor in health. The psalmist is sending out a huge warning to those who have excess. And again, I'm using this broader definition of rich being those who have more than what is sufficient. That would likely include every one of us and likely almost everyone that any of you know, by and large. Because generally in a capitalist society, there's not a whole lot of mixing between, at a social level, between the rich and the poor. Unfortunately, in a capitalist society, people have a tendency to live and deal with and have friends and relatives who are basically in the same economic status or higher or a little bit lower than they are. There's not many people that say, "I have a really good friend who is really, really poor financially." But we do have friends that are very poor in health. And God looks at sufficiency in both aspects. The psalmist is sending this huge warning to those who have excess. There are the poor who only have sufficient or less than sufficient, and there are those who have access. Continue reading here in Psalm 49, verse 6. It says, those who trust in their wealth, their possessions, or their access, those who trust in their wealth and boast in the multitude of their riches, none of them can by any means redeem his brother, nor give to God a ransom for him, for the redemption of their souls is costly, and it shall cease forever, that he should continue to live eternally and not see the pit. Again, be mindful of access. Let me read this to you out of the New Living Translation, because it actually can be understood a little bit better than the New King James. The New Living Translation says the following, verse 6. They trust in their wealth and boast in their great riches, yet they cannot redeem themselves from death by paying a ransom to God. Redemption does not come so easily, for no one can ever pay enough to live forever and never see the grave. Now we can begin to equate excess in finances with righteousness. Or we can begin to equate excellent health with being pleasing to God. Or we can begin to equate both with being further from damnation. But that is not what the Bible teaches. We have to be careful. You know, having more material things and being healthy does not automatically mean that an individual is closer to God. Just like a person that is very poor in health does not automatically mean that they are further from God. But that is clearly the innuendo of society and politics and religion. You know, our calibration of righteousness is attached to wealth and health. I mean, you've seen the preachers on Sunday morning. I got three jets. I have a home on the West Coast. I have a home on the East Coast. I have one up in Connecticut. I have one in Denver. I have a couple in Caribbean. Look how the Lord has blessed me. Send me your money. Show me your faith by sending me more. And God will bless you too. That's not biblical. But people have a tendency to connect, and I think we, even at lower levels, have a tendency to connect the material things that we have or the health that we have with righteousness. That's not the case. Go with me over to Psalm 119, verse 145. Psalm 119, 145. Our calibration or gauge, how we gauge righteousness, should not be based on access and wealth or our health, but based on our love and our obedience to God's law. That's how we have to measure our closeness to God. Not how much we have in the storehouse, not how much our 401k is, not how much we have in the bank, not how healthy we are. What is our relationship to God the Father and Jesus Christ? That's all that matters. Here in Psalm 119, verse 145, it says, I cry out with my whole heart. Hear me, O Lord. I will keep your statutes. And it's Paul, I think it's David here going through this. He is saying, look, I'm going through a horrendous trial. He didn't say, God, give me more money. Give me more health. This psalm, as we'll read through, says, Lord, give me your statutes. Help me to understand your word. Verse 146, I cry out to you, save me, and I will keep your testimonies. I rise before the dawning of the morning and cry for help. I hope in your word. My eyes are awake through the night watches, that I may meditate on your word. Hear my voice according to your loving kindness, O Lord. Revive me according to your justice, They draw near who follow after wickedness. They are far from your law. You are near, O God, and all your commandments are truth. Concerning your testimonies, I have known of old that you have founded them forever. It's difficult when we're sick to not lay in bed thinking about all that we don't have, how sick we are, what we can't do, all those other things. The psalmist says here, when you are down and out, focus on God's law. That's how I had to turn. Because within God's law, then you lay there and you say, you know what? I'm sufficient. When God heals me, he heals me. I'm going to do all I can towards that. I'm going to pray earnestly and ask him for the help. But when he does, he does. And until that time, I'm going to look at the statutes. I'm going to look at the testimonies. I'm going to look at his word. I'm going to look at his justice. I'm going to look at his law. I'm going to look at his commandments. Because that is where sufficiency comes from. When you're going through a trial, you're going through a sickness, you get a report of something that is terrible, some disease. The calibration of righteousness must be based on God's word. We have to be mindful of how we think about our excess, what we have extra. You know, some may believe that the United States is still being blessed because of its collective obedience and closeness to God. You know, and our money says in God we trust, but do we trust in God? Is that where we have our hope in our mind? You know, the church teaches that the United States is a benefactor of the faithfulness of Abraham, but has that intrinsic spiritual gift of Abraham run its course? And we're just simply as a nation enjoying the physical results of that initial blessing? You see, we can take that and we can relate that to our personal lives. You know, do we look at what we have in the bank and automatically think that we're more righteous? Or we think about our health and we say that we're more righteous? Or are we more righteous? Regardless of what is in the bank, regardless of our health. You know, it can be similar to a father who leaves his son $1 million in inheritance. You know, a father may have accumulated that wealth through a lifetime of hard work, education, dedication, giving to others, sacrifice, paying tithes, offerings, being obedient to God, repenting, changing when necessary. And because of his son's faithfulness and caring for his father as he aged, at his father's death, the father gives him an inheritance of $1 million. Once that gift is given, that blessing is then received. Whether that blessing benefits that son throughout the remainder of his life and extends to successive generations depends on what that son does with the blessing. What are we doing with the blessing above what is sufficient? What are we doing with our life? You see, sufficiency is not just what's in the bank. As Jesus Christ said, it's also life. What we're doing with our life. You know, if the son thinks that because of the inheritance of his father's wealth, he is now automatically righteous before God while being slothful during the day and a gigolo at night, he's sorely mistaken. You know, we know the story of the prodigal son over in Luke 15. We've read it many times. You know, that scenario is played out in family after family, whether it was monetary wealth that was inherited or skills or abilities or genetic health. You see, some families are blessed with great genetic health. Some are not. My mother's side of the family had tremendous genetic health in the generation before her. Most of her uncles and parents and that entire generation in her side of the family lived well into their 90s, Most of them, many of them, live to be over 100. And didn't die of all sorts of disease and everything. They died because their heart just gave out. The next generation after them came World War II, the latter part of World War II in Vietnam, and that next generation began to smoke unfiltered cigarettes. And that next generation, life expectancy was sliced by 20 years. All of the uncles, all of the aunts of that next generation died 20 years sooner than the generation prior. All of those who smoked. Those who did not smoke lived on into their 90s and later. Some families are blessed with good health. What are we doing with what we have been given? Our excess. Family, there's nothing wrong with having more than what is necessary. There are many rich people in the Bible, spoken of in the Bible, in very favorable terms. One of my favorites is Zacchaeus. Go with me over to Luke chapter 19, verse 2. Luke chapter 19, verse 2. There's nothing wrong with having wealth, and certainly we give God the glory for the wealth that we're able to have, but that wealth does not equal righteousness. Just like having good health does not equal righteousness. There are people who may be deathly ill, dealing with chronic diseases for decades, that are more faithful, more righteous, more holy than individuals who have had excellent health for decades. Zacchaeus was an individual who had great wealth, but also great spiritual wealth. It says here in Luke chapter 19, verse 2, it says, "And behold, there was a man named Zacchaeus, who was a chief tax collector, and he was rich. And he sought to see who Jesus was, but could not because of the crowd, for he was short in stature. So he ran ahead and climbed up a sycamore tree to see him, for he was going past that way. And when Jesus came to the place, he looked up and saw him and said, 'Zacchaeus, make haste, come down, for today I must stay at your house.'" Now that's amazing. Zacchaeus didn't know who Christ was, never seen him. He said, "I'm going to climb up this tree so when he comes by, I can see him." Jesus Christ come by and says, "Zacchaeus, come on down. How'd you know who I was?" Remember sufficiency? Sufficiency is Christ knowing you, you knowing Christ. So he made haste and came down and received him. He received Christ joyfully. But when they saw it, those who were around and saw it, they complained, saying, "He has gone to be the guest in a house of a man who is a sinner." Then Zacchaeus stood and said to the Lord, "Lord, look, I give half of my goods to the poor. And if I have taken anything from anyone by false accusation, I restore fourfold." And Jesus said to him, "Today salvation has come to this house, because he also is a son of Abraham, for the Son of Man has come to seek and to save that which was lost." Jesus Christ's perspective wasn't on how much he had. Jesus Christ's perspective was, what are you doing with the excess? And are you holy and righteous with the excess? In this case, excess wealth. You see, the friends of Zacchaeus were like, he's a sinner. I know tax collectors. I'm going to put him in the group with all, you know, we have that tendency, right? Tax collectors, they're this way. He's a tax collector. He's just like them. Zacchaeus said, "No, that ain't me. I'm not like them. My friends might think I'm like them. They may throw me in that category." But Jesus Christ said, I know you. And it's not because of your wealth that I know you. because of your righteousness. We have to think about access. Be mindful of access. God's word is the measure of righteousness, not our health, not what we have in the bank account. Point number three, be willing to give. Be willing to give. You know, God is watching what we do with the blessings he has given us. He's watching. God is concerned with how we handle the excess, that which we are blessed to have above our necessities. And again, our necessities are not limited to finances. It is all of life and the things we do with our time and our energy. God tells us when it comes to giving an offering, to give it as we are able. That's something that I have continued to emphasize, that we are not expected to give above what we're able. We're not expected to give away our excess, all of our excess, or to give away what we desire to pass on to the next generation. God tells us, and you can jot it down over in 2 Corinthians 9, verse 7, so let each one give as he purposes in his heart, not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loves a cheerful giver. This scripture is not just applicable to giving offerings, it is applicable to giving in general. God is less concerned with what or how much we give than how and why we give. Go with me over to Mark chapter 12, verse 41. Mark chapter 12, verse 41. Here in Mark chapter 12, verse 41, it says, now Jesus sat opposite the treasury and saw how the people put money into the treasury. You can read a little bit about the Jewish history. You know, they, when they were given an offering, you know, they wanted everybody to know how they were given the offering and how much they were giving.
I can't get my wallet out of my pocket. It's so big and filled with cash. Can somebody help me get my wallet out of my pocket, please?
Oh, yeah, let me see. I don't have anything less than a $100 bill. Oh, I'll just put in a stack of hundreds. Oh, praise be God. He's really blessed me.
That's what they were doing. And yeah, it says here, the rich put in much. Verse 42, then one poor widow came and threw in two mites. She just walking by, tossed it in, kept on going. She put in two mites, which makes a quadrant. So he called his disciples to him and said to them, assuredly I say to you that this poor widow has put in more than all those who have given to the treasury, for they put in out of their abundance, but she put in out of her poverty. She put in all that she had, her whole livelihood. Now that's the attitude, that's the heart that God would want us to have in our overall giving. You may decide to give to a neighbor. You may decide to give to a shelter, a relative, a fundraising effort. You may decide to give to a homeless person on the street. You may decide to give to a person that you've heard on the news that has gone through some tragedy. You may decide to give to some cause for good that you recognize. God is watching what you do with your excess. With your excess. You know, if our focus in this life is just on building bigger barns to hold more stuff, guess what? Bigger barns to hold more stuff is what we'll have. But notice again what it says over here in Psalm 49. Go with me back again to Psalm 49, verse 10. Psalm 49 and verse 10. Notice what it says here about those who just focused on building the bigger barns. It says, verse 10, for all, speaking of those with excess, for all can see, and I'm reading this out of the NIV, the New International Version. It says, for all can see that the wise die, that the foolish and the senseless also perish, leaving their wealth to others. Verse 11, their tombs will remain their houses forever, their dwellings for endless generations, though they had named lands after themselves. People desire their wealth, do not endure, they are like the beasts that perish. Verse 13, this is the fate of those who trust in themselves and of their followers who approve their sayings. They are like sheep that are destined to die. Death will be their shepherd, but the upright will prevail over them in the morning. Their form will decay in the grave, far from their priceless mansions. Remember the 3 points of this message. Be thankful for sufficiency. Be mindful of excess. Be willing to give. God wants wise, intentional, joyful giving to be a part of our character. It is God's character to give. God gave the life of Jesus Christ to all mankind. He did it purposefully, intentionally, planned, and strategically. And Jesus Christ did not give back to us, as a result, wealth, money, and riches. Christ gave his life. What are we giving? What are we giving? Our willingness to give must not only be in finances, but in our life, given purposefully, intentionally, planned, and strategically to help others as we are able. To help others as we are able. Our ability to give can be impactful in more ways than the amount that we give. It includes our life service to others. You see, when we're sick and when we're incapacitated, it's hard to do much of anything for anyone. When you're sick, as I was sick, like many of you have experienced, you're limited in your ability to share your life excess. You want to be able to do this. You'd like to get up and do that. You like to run over and help with this, but you can't. You see, the reality of life that God has designed is that there will come a time where every one of us will not be able to use any of life excess because we won't have any left. If God allows us to live into our 90s or whatever the case might be, we all will come to the point where we'll become health insufficient, where we become health dependent. When emotional or mental illness takes hold, we may have thousands or hundreds of thousands in the bank, but we're limited in our ability to manage it or direct it towards helping others. Some of you, like myself, have managed the finances of parents as their cognitive abilities began to wane. I know many of you have. My mother, who was always excellent with saving, stretching a dollar to make sure she had enough to cover her children as well as had enough to help someone else, was her way of life. My mother could create miracles with the dollar. My wife tells me, don't go telling too many of those stories. But my mother would buy a donut. That's all she had money for. She had 5 kids at home, a donut. But she'd bring that donut home, she'd cut it into 5 pieces, give a piece to every one of us, and it was like, wow. I'd sit in the corner and that piece of donut would last me a half hour. That was her way of life, that she was a giving person. As dementia and Alzheimer's began to set in, her decision-making abilities were severely impacted. Her heart and willingness to give was then taken advantage of by others. Individuals willing to commit fraud against the elderly would call her up, threatening jail time if she didn't write them a check or give them her credit card number or social security number. We have people here who've gone through that. There have been members here in this area who've been victims of fraud by others, taking advantage of their willingness to give. That is very sad. It's a very sad reality of this world that we live in. But God is watching what we do with what we have when we're able. When we're able. My mother came to a place where she was no longer able. But what was she doing when she was able? What are we doing when we're able? You know, at my mother's funeral, a man whom I grew up with and ran the streets with as a boy, whom I had not seen in almost 40 years, was living in poverty. All he had was what was sufficient for life, and oftentimes not that much. He was living in poverty, barely with sufficient, due to a life of alcohol, drugs, crime, and mental illness. He found himself homeless and hungry many times. He approached me at the start of the service as people were passing by the casket. He came up to me with tears rolling down his face, just crying and crying, tears rolling down his face. He said, "David, do you remember me?" I said, "Of course I do." He said, "I loved your mom. I could always count on stopping by her house when I was hungry and had nothing, and she would give me a sandwich. She would give me a sandwich. She didn't ask me what I'd been doing, why I was drunk, why I was on drugs, why I smelled bad, why I had soiled my pants. She would just go into the house, make me a sandwich, put it in a bag with a smile." Then with tears totally flowing down, unable to control his grief any longer, he said something to the effect, "Your mother was an angel. Your mother was expletive, an effing angel." That was the deepest way he could express his emotions, as tears flowed and he cried and cried, and like a 2-year-old, practically went stomping up the aisle in anger at my mother's death. My mother never once in all my days felt that her giving was anything more than a gracious privilege to give others what God had given her. There was no pretense, no regret, no pompous thought. If she had a few coins to spare, she would give you change. If she had bread, which she always tried to always have bread, she would make a sandwich, even if the only thing that was inside it was Miracle Whip. My friend, as he told me later, had many Miracle Whip sandwiches because he knew that's all my mama had. My mother had a giving heart. What do we do with our access? See, even as an executive, when I would come home from California, I'd stop by her house in the inner city. We always tried to make sure that my mom was taken care of, though we had to keep an eye on her carefully because she wouldn't ask for any help unless she had nothing left. But even as an executive making a good salary, I'd stop by the house, and before I left, my mom said, "Hold on for a minute." She'd go into her bedroom, go digging through her purses to find some change. A couple dollars here, wrinkled up, folded up dollars here, little coins, and come to me. And I'm an executive. I'm making really good money. And she'd bring it to me and say, "Hey, take this. Don't spend it in one place." And that was after I gave her maybe $200, $300, $400, or $500 to make sure that she was okay while I was gone. The connection wasn't made. The connection was, this my son.
I need to help him with what I have. And she'd go through that purse, this purse, not that purse, no that purse, and collect what she could, put in my hand. Don't spend it all in one pay, in one place. Again, she never went without, but she would never ask for anything unless she had nothing. We have to be willing to give. That's the heart that God wants us to have. Again, here in Psalm 49, verse 15, it reads as follows, out of the NIV. It said, but God will redeem me from the realm of the dead. He will surely take me to himself. Do you know that? Do you believe that? No matter what it is that you're going through, that's sufficient. Is that good enough for you? I had to come to recognize, Father, I'm sorry. That's good enough. I know you raised me from this COVID. Many people have. I'm doing the things that I need to do physically. But for a while there, it didn't feel like it. And he steers us to his word to say, it's good enough. I am sufficient. Verse 16, it says, do not be overawed when others grow rich, when the splendor of their houses increase. For they will take nothing with them when they die. Their splendor will not descend with them. Though while they live, they cannot themselves bless, and people praise you when you prosper. They will join those who have gone before them, who will never again see the light of life. People who have wealth but lack understanding are like beasts that perish, because they don't understand God is sufficient. When you're sick on the bed of affliction, dealing with illness, sickness, or isolated as I was for nearly 3 weeks with COVID-19, I spent a lot of time thinking about what I would like to do, what I have yet to do, what I have yet to give, thanking God finally as I came around for the excess that I hadn't really given much thought to. Not just financial excess, but physical and health excess. Extra. Family, don't take God's sufficiency for granted. Family, God is watching. Be thankful for sufficiency. Be mindful of excess. Be willing to give.